In today's show, we have Brian Burke, who is Chief Mac Man at Sell Your Mac. I met Brian at ACG Cincinnati, and today we're going to talk about innovation in the Apple ecosystem.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutze, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Thanks for having me on, Sam. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So maybe a good place to get started is tell me a little bit about your background and how did you get into this business?
Well, I've always loved Apple computers, but I had no idea I would find myself in this business. You know, when I graduated college, I didn't have a job right out of school, but I was trying to get a job in finance up in New York City. And when I came back home, I decided to start an eBay business. And I got a few great deals on some cell phones and was really ramping up my local cell phone purchases. And you know, from there, I found myself with a couple Apple deals on my plate. And really, after doing a couple Apple deals, I knew that was my true passion and love. So I kind of pivoted to focus on the Apple world.
Okay. And you're from here in Cincinnati, right?
Born and raised.
And where did you go to high school?
Indian Hill High School. I grew up in Kenwood.
Okay. And where did you go to college?
Went to Tulane University, which was one of the reasons I didn't get a job right out of school is because the hurricane hit my senior year.
Oh.
Katrina busted everyone out, so I was up in Boston University for a semester.
Oh, wow. So with your business, I guess tell us a little bit about your business now and what you're doing with it.
So SellYourMac.com is a way for people to trade in their Apple products for cash. So people go to the website, they get an instant quote on what their device is worth, and we make the process very hassle-free. We like to say it's fast, safe, and easy. You know, you can sell your gadget on your own for maybe slightly more money, but if you consider the amount of time, hassle, and potential risk you have selling it yourself, it's much easier to sell to a service like ours. You're guaranteed cash, you know, within the first week you send it in. So we try to provide a great value back for our clients. And then on the flip side, we turn around, we refurb, clean up, erase the devices, and resell them online on our e-commerce sites.
Okay. And so, you know, what kind of savings or return and stuff are customers getting, you think, by purchasing through you all or working with you all?
You know, typically, you're saving about 30 to 80%, and you're going to save 30% on a device that literally just came out this year. So if you want to buy a 2018 MacBook Pro that normally you'd pay $2,500 at Apple, you can get those right now from us for about $1,800. So it's pretty incredible savings.
Okay. And so folks, I think you told me earlier that, you know, your primary channels that people are buying things are, you have eBay, as well as, direct sales. And then you also sell, sort of have your own retail store within your own walls now. Is that true?
We do. Yeah. eBay has been our biggest channel from the start. And we're going to be getting away from that a little bit in the future. We're going to launch our own e-commerce site. And then we have a retail store at our location right now. So a really great place for customers to come in, get unbelievable service, you know, with our intelligent Apple staff and, you know, get all the answers they need.
Okay. And your building is there on Kenwood Road.
Yeah, we're right here on Kenwood Road.
Up the street.
11101 Kenwood Road.
And was that your original location? Did you start there?
Well, originally it started in my parents' basement, but I was kicked out in about 2 months. My mom said she couldn't see anything anymore. I took over. Then I went to a two-bedroom apartment. I overgrew that in about a year. You know, I had boxes everywhere. I couldn't even eat on my dining room table. Then I went to a house in Loveland. Ultimately got a cease and desist order for having too many employees. I only have one employee there, and I had about five at the time. So we had 2 weeks to find a new location. And then we went to the TechView Center over in Lincoln Heights, and we were there for about 2 years until we outgrew that space. And then we landed in Blue Ash, and that's been our location for about the last 7 years.
Okay. So in the last 7 years, you've grown your staff quite a bit there, I believe, as well. And I think have you taken over more of that building? Is that true?
We haven't taken over more space, but when we first went there, we probably only used about, you know, a third of it. And now it's overly full. You know, just last summer we did a huge expansion project and had to build all new racking, you know, three-story racking so we could put pallets up everywhere. So yeah, we're maxed out currently. And in terms of staff, you know, we went from about six people at the previous warehouse to now we have 24.
Nice. And I was going to mention recently, you've gotten quite a lot of accolades and awards and nominations and stuff. I've been seeing a lot on all the social media channels. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
And it's been all over the place. We have gotten, very, very blessed to have gotten so many awards. We've been growing very quickly. In Cincinnati, we're part of the Cincinnati Business Courier Fast 55, number 12 fastest growing company in Cincinnati. And also on the national level, the Inc. 5000, we were number 2,654th fastest growing private company in the U.S. A couple other local awards. We're Gehring Center finalist. We're a John Barrett Entrepreneur Vision finalist. So yeah, a lot of awards recently. Personally, I was an EY Entrepreneur of the Year finalist. Hoping to try again next year to try to be a winner.
Nice. Congratulations. So when your customers are coming to sell their products, they come to your website and they fill out information about what they've got and they can get a price quote right then and there, right? How do you kind of figure out what the right number is to pay for any particular product?
The pricing is definitely one of the hardest things in the business. We're doing a lot of comparisons online to what the average, sale prices are for some of these SKUs. We're comparing against some of our competitors to make sure we're very competitive and paying top dollar. Definitely one of my goals is ensure that our clients get a great value back for their Macs and other Apple products. So if we're not beating our competitors on price, we see that as a problem. So I really do want to offer the highest price to everyone we possibly can.
Nice. And I think you work a lot with school districts and such who are trying to, I guess, are they typically replacing district-wide or a school at a time? Or what do you typically kind of find?
Sometimes it's in waves, just depending on the school. Sometimes schools will refresh, like a quarter of their stuff at a time as there's aging product. Other times it is, district-wide, huge takeouts. We work across schools, small, medium businesses. We work with some of the competitors in industry that we're, friendly with and we're their Apple processing arm. And we also work with individuals and families. We started our business working with individuals on our website and kind of grown the small and medium business clients over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And I think most folks are finding you through all of the online marketing that you're doing in SEO and stuff nowadays.
SEO has been huge, and we've created a lot of content to drive people to our website. And also, we're doing AdWords and other stuff like mm-hmm. that. I've been on a lot of podcasts, recently, trying to get, more promotional stuff out there. The awards certainly help. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the word's getting out.
And so if you're doing AdWords, and you're advertising on a word like new MacBook or something, and there's got to be a lot of competition for that word, I imagine. I mean, are you bidding directly against Apple in some cases, or how do you manage that dynamic?
It's funny you mentioned that. I was just reading an article about the top price keywords, and if mm-hmm. you are a lawyer or insurance, these people are paying, $40, $50 a click. Typically we're seeing a few dollars a click. Mm-hmm. They are competitive keywords, but it's usually people in industry and Apple. And Apple doesn't really bid on all the keywords. And mm-hmm. if you're searching for something to buy, they're on there, but usually when someone's trying to sell, they usually don't pop up on the top.
Okay. And are there a lot of other, do you have a lot of other competitors doing exactly what you're doing across the country? Are you really sort of regional or?
More than ever now.
Yeah.
The competition is fierce. We'd like to say that, we're one of the best industry. Our industry rankings show that we're number one in the world across our competitors on a site called Reseller Ratings, which is kind of the third party industry standard. So yeah, we're very proud that our team has been able to achieve that.
Wow. It's pretty cool. And the industry precisely you would define that as, I guess, reselling.
Any kind of buyback companies, in the Apple ecosystem.
Okay. All right. Because you'll buy back, anything Apple makes, I guess. It's really just laptops.
About the
phones.
Last 10 years.
Okay.
So yeah, phones, watches, iPads, Macs, Apple TVs, with a very heavy focus on the Macs themselves.
Gotcha. Well, and it seems to me that there's, sort of a sustainability message to that too, just because even something 10 years ago, folks might just pitch it, if they don't have some outlet to sell it. But
that really pains my heart when someone throws a Mac in the trash can.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can just sell it to us, even if it's not for that much money, and we can just repurpose it and ensure it gets a new life in someone else's home.
Yeah. And do you have stuff that you receive that you're like, okay, this is basically garbage and you need to, you recycle it and you have to dispose of it somehow?
We are very green. You know, we use a zero landfill company, which means that nothing will ever hit the landfill. So we do actually recycle, you know, a couple pallets of stuff every week, but they're going to break it down to its smallest components and ensure nothing ever hits the trash.
Yeah. Because I think all these, I mean, any of the modern Macs are, you know, 100%, well, the casing are 100% recyclable aluminum and such.
All aluminum.
Right. So let's talk about Apple and some of your background with that. You mentioned earlier that, you know, that was something you knew you wanted to go into. So why did you want to work with Apple products? And, you know, what was some of your early experience with them that made that something you're passionate about?
I think looking back, you know, Apple products have always worked so well that it creates such a happy customer base. And I don't want to work with other products that create a bad feeling. You know, I want someone when they receive a product from us, and they're very happy to use it. I think if they're using a PC, ultimately they're just not going to have great feedback. So getting into a product line that provides a great experience was definitely top of mind for me. And also that it holds a lot of value. You know, it's hard to resell a product if it's going to lose 50% of its value in the first week. And you're looking into the PC industry, I mean, these products over 2 years might lose 80, 90% of their value versus Apple's going to hold on to a good portion of their value.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and I think, you know, Apple products, it's not necessarily just about the product, but I've always found that, because I use my Apple laptop every day.
We're recording on your Mac right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the operating system is something, and the sort of the class of that is something that a lot of people don't give enough credit to, you know, anymore.
Software is key.
Yeah. And anytime I have to use a Windows machine, it is not as nice of an experience per se as what I'm used to.
It's true. I mean, they're the same chips that go in Microsoft products, but it's really the integration of the hardware and software that makes it so usable. And then from there, it's the ecosystem that all the products talk so well together. Yep. You know, if you had five different branded PC Android products, they just don't work seamlessly compared to Apple. They're all talking all in sync 100% of the time.
Yeah. And I was having this conversation about Android and iPhone a little while ago with someone. And I was like, you know, I can take a note in my Notes app on my Mac, and then it's immediately on my phone. And I do that all the
instantly.
Time. Constantly I'm doing that. And sure, there's, you know, I could install Evernote or something and do that elsewhere, but why, you know? And the same with, you know, I think there's just a lot of innovations they've done with their own applications and how tightly knit they are from a platform standpoint that you just don't get elsewhere, really.
I couldn't agree more.
And so where do you kind of think Apple is headed? I mean, they recently, something that I've seen you talking about on social media is, you know, the new Apple Card and all this. So now they're getting into banking and credit card and finance and all that sort of stuff a little bit. What do you think is kind of on the horizon that they're going to be announcing soon?
It's really going to be a big shift away from product focus to a service focus. You know, they have this massive customer base. There's over 1 billion iPhone users. There's over 1.4 billion users across all their products. So they're going to be able to monetize their user base across other industries. Mm-hmm. I think the next thing they're getting into besides the credit card space is really healthcare. And we don't really know exactly what they're going to do right now, but obviously they've been focusing a lot of attention on the watch. There's a lot of different you know, studies being done through that right now. They're collecting a lot of user data. They're going to be able to help us create healthier lives. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to give us more instant feedback on what's going on in our bodies. And that might turn into, you know, some healthcare facilities or, you know, other record keeping and stuff like that, that, you know, we don't have right now. So, you know, it's going to be pretty exciting to see what they can do there.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting from a services standpoint. You know, if you look at Apple Podcasts on iTunes and such, I mean, that's been there a very long time. At one point, it was the only podcasting platform. And even today, still, just about every other podcasting platform basically just recycles and redistributes the iTunes podcast.
You have to be on iTunes podcast.
Yeah, podcast listings and, you know, their whole database. But at the same time, you know, playing a podcast via iTunes on your Mac is not how most people are going to consume it, right? And, you know, and there's the podcast app on your phone, but there's a lot of others on there that probably are more popular or at least maybe better. So I kind of wonder if they won't really drastically try to improve what they're doing there, as well as with the music you know, side of things.
Well, they are splitting up all their apps. You know, yeah. they're breaking up the iTunes, have separate, you know, music, mm-hmm. video, podcast apps. I think that's part of their strategy.
Yeah.
You know, they've already done that on the iPhone, but the Mac will be the next.
Yeah. Well, and of course, they launched all the Apple Music subscription stuff, which I have found is probably better than, because I've had a lot of those Tidal and Spotify and Pandora and, you know, all those other ones out there.
Apple Music's your favorite one now?
Yeah, when I don't have the subscription right now, but I liked sort of the suggestions they made. I think were better, you know, more likely to be something that music I would like, you know, as opposed to just sort of random stuff from Pandora.
Or yeah, I enjoy the suggestions, but my biggest use case is probably with my HomePods. I can shout anywhere in my house and have it start playing music.
Sure.
So I like that.
Okay. We have an Amazon Alexa in our house, which. We usually have to turn on mute just because our kids talk to it too much, you know, and
they're always waking up Alexa.
Yes. Or just having to play music on 10. They love volume level 10, you know, and then blowing us away. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
My 2-year-old can almost get Siri to work for her every time. She's only done it a couple times now, but I'm sure give her a few more months.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
What was the very first Apple product you ever used?
My first Mac was a Performa desktop, and it was back in probably fourth grade that I had it. And I had a computer teacher. His name was Peter Lyon. He got me really started and super involved in how to use the Mac. So that was pretty cool looking back. That was my, you know, first use case of how to do everything on a computer. And I just learned rapidly. And in elementary school, I was basically teaching the computer class. You know, our teacher wasn't that familiar with computers. And I was up there, you know, we were working on PCs at the time. But I was kind of, you know, leading the class through things because I had so much experience.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember, you know, my very first time I ever did programming was in Logo with the little turtle in Logo on an Apple IIc, I believe.
Wow.
Maybe it was even Apple II, I think, back in probably first grade. But even, you know, through junior high, I mean, you know, we were doing stuff in HyperCard. And
HyperCard was my first programming app.
Yeah. And I remember, distinctly remember they had a scanner in our computer lab like in seventh grade. And
took 10 minutes.
Yeah. And it was black and white and like 72 DPI or something. And I did a project on sharks and I scanned a picture of a shark. And I was just like, wow, like that's on
amazing.
On my screen. It's just crazy, you know? And, but there were no PCs, you know, even capable of doing that at that point, you know, or even in the school really. So, I mean, definitely at that time, and it sounds like still today, I think a lot of schools are predominantly Apple-based.
Unfortunately, a lot of schools have been moving away because they're trying to get, you know, to a cheaper computer and looking at these Chromebooks.
Yeah, well, that's
but
true.
One of the issues is, I mean, they're basically disposable. There's not going to be hardly any value when they go to resell them. And, you know, they might get $5 or $10 a piece as opposed to a Mac that they might be getting, you know, $300 a piece.
Interesting. Well, and I know they, my wife's a teacher and they talk about, they always have to use OpenOffice. I guess, or
some free of office, those
free office things on these Chromebooks, or they're, I guess they're doing.
Use Google.
Yeah, they do a lot of Google Doc type stuff, Google Sheets, which is fine, but those just are not really up to par with either, you know,
well,
Microsoft.
Apple's Office apps are all free now.
Well, yeah, true. Well, and you know, and even the, and the Google apps are not up to par with Microsoft Office either, but again, you know, Microsoft Office costs, you know, isn't free.
Yeah, $100 a year as a student is quite steep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I don't know how a school would license that exactly district wide, but I don't know too many that have.
They typically don't. It's just, you know, cost prohibitive.
Yeah. Interesting. And so your retail store that you've got in there, I'm curious because that's a relatively new thing. I think you're doing on your location where folks can come in and buy and see products.
It's our first official retail store. Mm-hmm. You know, at our last place we didn't have retail, but people would come in anyways.
Yeah.
So we still had to deliver the same level of service in our lobby.
Okay.
But that was one of the goals when we found this space, make sure we had something set up so the customers could come get that experience.
Gotcha. So now you have a little bit more like a showroom.
Yeah, it's an official showroom. We got different product lines up. You know, every table, you know, has its own type of products. You know, there's laptops, desktops, an iPhone, and iPad table. And we have places for customers to, you know, get quotes. They have their own little station. They can go in there. And then, you know, of course, a checkout area and stuff like that.
So did you have to – so when you are buying used Apple products off the internet and so on and so forth and selling them, obviously I don't know that you need any special permission or anything from Apple to do that.
You don't. Right? Anyone is allowed to sell an Apple product.
Yeah. But if you're selling new products from Apple, I'm assuming
you'd have to be Apple authorized, right, which they don't even give authorizations out anymore. Hmm. And, you know, from what I hear from our people that I know are, you know, the margins are very slim, so it's not very desirable to get in.
Okay.
It's more of just people are continuing that business, usually alongside being a service provider.
So in your showroom, you're selling things that have come in from people.
They are all used. Okay, you know, gotcha. There's obviously exceptions. Some people mm-hmm. sell us new products that they maybe won in a promo or a raffle or a gift or something like that.
Okay. So how do you how have you found it? I think you mentioned in our conversations in the past what it's like to sort of compete against the Apple Store in a way when you're talking about the showroom side of things. What do you hear from your customers in terms of why they're coming in there as opposed to coming into the Apple Store?
The biggest differentiator is probably the level of service we deliver. It's instantaneous service. Mm-hmm. You know, versus going to the Apple Store, you're usually waiting in a queue to talk to someone. Of course, a lot of times you're in a mall, you got to find parking, and, you know, mm-hmm. the hassles with that. You know, at our location, you pull right up, you walk in, someone's there to greet you within seconds. So, you know, that immediate service is great. And also, we really work to solve the customer's problems. I think a lot of times at Apple, this isn't a knock on them, but they're, you know, trying to push more of the newer products if you mm-hmm. have an older product with a problem. You know, typically after 5 years, they say they're vintage or obsolete and they won't even work on them or supply parts for them. First, you know, we will go back and, you know, help someone even with an older product that we don't even sell anymore. We can go order parts online to fix it if they truly want that. So it's really like giving them the option. You know, we could say, you know, we can fix this, you know, Mac for $200, put a new screen on it, or we can sell you another Mac that's even newer for $500. So just ensuring we can meet the customer needs, that's typically our goal. Make sure they have the options that they can either replace or, you know, buy another one at a steep discount.
Gotcha. And yeah, I think the Apple Store can be a little bit of a mixed bag sometimes, because depending on how used you are to the way they work, if you just stand there like, what am I supposed to do? Like, no,
it's overwhelming sometimes. Yeah, there's 300 people in the store.
Yeah, there's 300. And I've been to those all over the world. I mean, I was in one in Barcelona and because I like to drop in and check them out. How are they
sure.
different? And they're all kind of the same, right? Which is for the most part, but they have slight differences. For some folks, particularly older folks, I think it's what is happening right here. This is like some weird
intense
flash mob going on in here.
And I love Apple stores. I mean, yeah. I go to every time I go to a new city, I'm always checking it out.
Yeah.
You know, I go to New York City all the time, the Fifth Avenue store, the mm-hmm. one in Grand Central. You know, if I'm in San Fran, I'm going to Union Square. I mean, it's a gorgeous place to hang out and meet people and talk about all things Apple. So it's nothing against them at all. It just can be overwhelming and busy, and you mm-hmm. could be waiting a long time to get service.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned something about how you can order parts and stuff. So I guess, do you do a lot of repair services for folks there? Or, you know, what kind of level of reconditioning and work and repair on products that come into you do you have to do? You know, how difficult is that, I guess?
Well, we buy, sell, and service. Yeah. So if someone comes in with a broken product, we usually give them two options. You know, a lot of times it's usually a busted screen. So we can say, you know, hey, we can order this part online for, you know, $200 and, you know, here's our fee to get it all fixed up for you. Or we can just give you a great value on your broken Mac and then help you get into a new one at a discount. And a lot of times we try to upgrade them to the newer product from only the standpoint that it's best for the customer. You know, if you're using a Mac that's 6, 7 years old, let's say, and we can get you into a newer Mac for, you know, not much more than the cost to replace the screen, you're going to be better off for the long run. So we're going to recommend that.
Yeah. Okay. Do you do repairs such as the standard, you know, replace the iPhone battery and all the, you know, that sort of stuff? Or is it?
The iPhone battery maybe is one of the top requested things, mm-hmm. but Apple has launched a program that does it at such a steep discount that you can't compete at that level. Mm-hmm. And also on the iPhone screens, you know, I tell everyone to go to the Apple store and don't go anywhere else, because there's nowhere else you can get an OEM screen. Until yesterday, they literally announced there's going to be a new repair program for independent repair shops, but the OEM screens are insanely expensive. And, you know, avoid all these random third-party repair shops. They're going to place it with a screen that's likely not going to last a year. It might have a pink or a random hue to the screen you might not notice right away, but ultimately it's not going to be as high quality as it was originally.
Well, in fact, I think I saw just recently that they've added a new feature that some people are upset about, that if you have these sort of non-approved screens, it'll pop up and say, you know, you're running with a incompatible screen or
the device is pretty smart. Yeah. They know what's going on, and they, you know, they don't want random parts in there, because ultimately it's not going to deliver a great customer experience. If they're replacing with a non-OEM battery that maybe only lasts, you know, 60-70% as long as original, the customer is going to be unhappy with Apple, even though they got replaced at a third party shop.
Hmm. Yeah.
They're all about their brand. They're protecting every way they possibly can.
Yeah. Interesting. And how are you sort of innovating? How do you think you're sort of innovating that buyer supplier model and enabling sort of an easier sales process for your customers of all these products that are coming in? What are some of the things you've had to invent to do that?
One of the best things I can point to is our latest website update. And now you can get an instant quote just using your serial number. So if you go to the website, you copy the serial number from About This Mac, or you copy it straight off your iPhone About, paste it in there. It's going to fill out all the product details for you. So you don't need to know anything about this specific, you know, processor, hard drive, RAM that might be in the computer, which frankly, most people don't know off the top of their heads.
Sure.
So you don't have to go searching for that anywhere else. It'll give you the price right away after you just click the condition and the functional specs on there. So you get an instant quote without much hassle. And then at the same time, you can turn around and you can buy a used Mac, you know, right from our site as well.
Gotcha. And what about, you know, you mentioned that you had to put in some new racks and such in your building there. And I think you were also looking at sort of technology to help manage all that internally as well. What new stuff have you sort of gotten pushed into because of growth and whatnot that you had to invest in?
It's been a long time planning, but our new inventory supply chain system, it does a lot of automation between processes, you know, helps drive different workflows. So you don't have to necessarily know exactly where to send the item on next. So it's a lot of communication, both internally and externally. You know, on the external side, we're letting customers know kind of every step of the way. That was one of the things that we heard back from customers, that we did an awesome level of communication. So I wanted to increase it to a whole nother level. You know, so for instance, as soon as you get a quote, you're going to have a shipping label in your email. When you drop it at FedEx, we're going to tell you that we've received it. It's been received at FedEx. When it ships, you're going to get another notification that's landed at our place. As soon as we wipe it, we're sending you an email saying it's, your device is safe. It's been wiped. So kind of every step of the way, we want to make sure we're communicating properly. And then, you know, on the sales side, we've done some more automation. You know, we can, you know, one click post to eBay, for instance. So everything we can do to kind of speed up our processes is something that we've been working on.
Gotcha. And what about just all the picking and packing and shipping when things are going out? I mean, is that, you know, is that all part of that software system?
It
too,
is. Or? Yeah, it's funny. We went all custom, so we've used FedEx and USPS APIs. You know, it's going to print out a packing list showing exactly what shelf all these items on. Makes it easier for our team to find the items, and then it's, you know, one click to print the labels, and it tells you what box to put them in. All kind of all those sorts of steps.
How many shipments a day do you think are coming out of there? And
we are doing about 200 packages a day right now.
Nice.
We're pretty busy.
That's cool. What do you think has been kind of what have really been the key drivers for that growth that you've experienced? I mean, just exposure and marketing and advertising, or what do you think has really been driving?
I mean, SEO has kind of always been the backbone, but we have focused more on the content and the more of the strategy behind the SEO lately. The AdWords is something we've only done the last 2 years, so that's certainly helped out a lot. And also been doing more outreach to try to find, you know, larger, you know, bulk customers, as we call them. Mm. So going to more industry events, okay, conferences, getting more active on LinkedIn, just trying to post on there every day, and just, you know, kind of building a following of people that are interested in our services.
Do you think there's any kind of market trend or growth just in the popularity of the products, or maybe the pricing of new Apple products or something that is pushing any of that for you?
I would say the ecosystem in the industry is definitely growing overall, but the fact that there's so many players that are popping up all the time and we're still able to keep growing has, you know, been a great testament to our team. And, you know, more people are having 5-year old Apple products coming off of service, so that's definitely helping drive it. And looking forward, maybe there are less products, you know, 5-10 years out, and they're going to be less serviceable, so there might even be more upgrades from the standpoint that they're unrepairable.
Interesting. So when is something unrepairable, typically?
The latest Macs are almost unrepairable. You know, everything is soldered to the logic board. If you have a small issue, a lot of times you're going to have to replace the unit.
Okay. With those customers you're directly reaching out to, I mean, what kind of relationship do you try to foster with them? I mean, do they have your cell phone number? You're at their beck and call, and you know, a very close knit supplier relationship for those sort of direct or larger accounts. Is it more of like a just in time on demand fulfillment thing where you just boom, you know, you get an order and that's it?
I would say all our large customers, you know, have our contact information and they can reach out to us anytime. You know, I think personally, I'm very accessible to our largest clients. They have my cell phone number and email, and I try to answer in seconds.
Yeah.
Another guy at my office, Nick, he handles a lot of our bulk clientele, and, you know, they have all his information, reach out to him directly all the time. So we're kind of right there as soon as they need us. Mm-hmm. And there could be a large time between cycles, but as soon as they need us, you know, we're going to be right there to send them, you know, packing materials, give them a bulk quote, and, you know, kind of anything they might need.
Okay. And do you kind of consult with them to help them figure out what it is they need and such as well?
If they ask us, we're happy to, yeah, but a lot of times they don't come to ask us those questions.
Sure.
You know, we see a lot of customers that just keep buying new from the standpoint that it might just work out better for their internal workforce if they just need newer Macs, let's say, and I can't provide an unlimited supply of, you know, 6 months old Macs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but we're still getting those back every time.
Hmm. Is there a point at which how long do you hang on to products before you say, okay, this is now beyond the sort of sellable lifetime? You know,
you're using a 2013 MacBook Air, so I think we should upgrade that in the near future.
That's a good point.
It all comes down to use case, though.
Sure.
I mean, if let's say you're a student and you just need to be typing and using the internet, using a 5-6-year-old Mac is probably fine. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing video production or, you know, marketing materials, and you're using Adobe Photoshop and different movie production software, you have to have a newer Mac or you're just going to be bogged down and it's going to be running slow. So I always ask customers, the first thing is, you know, how are you going to use this? And that's on the Mac side. I think on the iPhone side, I always like to have the absolute latest, because you're going to be using that so many hours per day. You know, now the screen time tells you, and, you know, most people are using their iPhone, you know, 3-4 hours a day, let's say. Mm-hmm. And you got to have the latest device for that. You're losing seconds, you know, constantly. And also from taking photographs, you know, if you have kids, I mean, you want to save these things forever, you better be using the best camera.
Sure. No, that makes sense. What are some of the areas, and where are some of the new things you think you're going to get into, and where you're going to going next, I guess, with your business? Because you always want to be adding and innovating and creating new things, inventing new processes and services.
You know, our goal is to be the number one choice when people are thinking about buying or selling their Apple products. And in order to do that, we have to provide the most cash value and also make it the fastest. So continuously innovating around the speed to get a quote. You know, right now as a consumer, you get an instant quote, but as a business customer, we don't have that set up yet. So that's going to be the next step for us. And really kind of speeding up the process as fast as we can. You know, can we pay you before you even send it? You know, different ideas like that we can, you know, really push the envelope on. Hmm. And then, you know, from there, personally, I see myself working with a lot more larger customers, you know, trying to do more of the consulting side of these larger businesses to ensure they have the right products to meet their needs. And then we can refresh them at a rate that's going to help their business keep growing.
Do you find for those types of customers, when you talk about refreshing, you know, are there subscription models and stuff for hardware that you think are viable out there where you could say, you know, hey, sign up for, there's a contract and every 6 months you get a new machine and so on and so forth. And
there are some business models out there to do that. And the consumer level, there isn't yet.
Yeah.
You know, you can go straight through the Apple store to do a, you know, 2-year lease, sure. as a business. And I think more and more that's going to be happening. You know, people are used to paying their cell phone bills on a monthly basis. So if they can just pay, you know, $50 to have a Mac and have it upgraded every year, they'd probably be thrilled.
Sure. Absolutely. What do you think is one of the more rewarding projects or sort of outreach and stuff you've done recently that you've gotten a lot out of personally?
You know, for me, always trying to give back as we grow has been key. And just in the last couple of years, I've been donating a lot of laptops to underprivileged students. And there's a couple different organizations locally I've been working with. You know, Adopt a Class, I'm on the board there. I've donated a bunch of iMacs to some of their classrooms. Another one is a Cincinnati Youth Collaborative. I've been donating a new-ish laptop to all the different outstanding students that have won that award as they go on to college. And it's just amazing to see how happy they are that they receive a device that can really further their education. And you know, they can't afford these on their own, and they know that they need it for school, and they don't have any other way to get it. So they might be using a 10-year-old PC if they didn't have this new Mac at their hands. And that just gives me a lot of happiness to know that we're able to give back and help these people, in their careers.
Yeah, and I mean, it's awesome. And without a doubt, having some kind of computer, it's just required anymore for, even junior high and on, it seems like.
If you don't have access to a computer, you're definitely not going to be, learning or growing as fast as you could personally.
Yeah. I mean, everything my kids use is all through Google Classroom and such. And I mean, I guess if you don't have a home PC or something that can't handle it or whatever, and a really old one, I don't know what you do. I mean, you're kind of stuck, really. And of course, a lot of kids going off to college now, I mean, they either get one when they arrive. It's part of tuition, right? At least I know it at my alma mater. It's almost a necessary
tool. It's a requirement at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if having an iPhone is a requirement for every kid, as much as they might want one.
My daughter loves her iPhone, and it keeps her content when we're out to a nice dinner.
Right. What do you think? So obviously, some of your core values are, you know, like you said, supporting your local community. And I think you're in another service organization in town as well that you're a member of as well, right?
Well, the biggest nonprofit I have support is Adopt a Class.
Okay.
And it's a business mentoring experience that we go in and we adopt the classroom. We go in and show them another way of business that they're not familiar with. You know, unfortunately, a lot of these kids still think that they can make it as an NBA or a football star. Mm. And, that's not the case. And we don't want them, on the streets later in life. So showing them how business works, how you can get involved and learn towards these different industries. And it kind of opens their eyes to what the potential is out there. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's and kids really take to entrepreneurship, I find. A lot of times if they understand just how to do it a little bit and aren't afraid to try.
They haven't visited a business before.
Yeah.
So, one of the things we do is we do field trips to our businesses, and they are just amazed at what goes on here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing is, too, is it's something that it's possible for all of them to do. I mean,
it absolutely is. You have to believe in yourself, though.
Yeah. You don't need to have some, special way in to start a business, right? You just give it a shot.
If you look at some of the top people in the world and where they came from, Gary Vee, for instance, mm-hmm. Someone like that, and you can build an empire around yourself no matter where you start.
Yeah. So obviously one of your core things that's important to you is giving back in that time. What are, when you look at the employees in your company and sort of how you treat them and how you work with them, what are some of your other sort of core values that you as a business owner, that are in your DNA, you think?
So we have four core values we talk about, and the acronym is SHIP. So the S stands for speed, and we want to work fast but accurately and make sure we get our clients, paid quickly. The H stands for honesty. You know, we're always honest with our customers. You know, if you send us a Mac that's newer than you said, we're actually going to pay you more. You know, if you have a bigger hard drive than you quoted, we're going to upgrade your price. So doing everything we can there. The I stands for ideas. We always want people to be sharing ideas and not be afraid to be wrong. Just put it out there. You know, don't be afraid that it might sound stupid. And the P is passion. And it's passion for Apple products and people. And if you're not passionate about Apple, you're probably just not going to be a great fit at our company. We want people that love Apple products. They can tell the customer more about Apple and how the products can benefit their lives.
Hmm. What's your favorite Steve Jobs story?
Ooh, Steve Jobs story.
Anecdote.
My quote that I always point to is Steve Jobs saying, "Don't let others drown out your inner voice." Hmm. And, you know, that really to me means, you know, be able to showcase your passion no matter what people say. And people told me that I would fail at this eBay business back when I got started. And I had to keep pushing forward through many hard times to, prove to myself that I could make this happen. And there was times, you know, I could have faltered and failed. So just making sure that you know what you're capable of inside and can keep moving ahead. Hmm.
Interesting. Well, and I think the SHIP acronym and values is awesome too. I think it really helps sometimes to solidify things when you have that written down, you know, and out there.
It's on our walls.
Without a doubt. And you mentioned eBay and like we talked about earlier, I think that's sort of like a big part of your outbound
that's how we got
sales
started
and such. So, you know, I guess you had to sort of master that platform and how that works and just how to gain visibility on eBay and all that, you know, how to write the titles of the items that are out there. And I mean, there's all that sort of, you know, competition in that marketplace. What have you sort of learned along the way as an eBay seller that is specific to eBay, you know, no matter what you're selling there, I guess, that you've really been able to leverage?
Like you said, I have learned a lot along the way, and I started young, and I was doing arbitrage sales with Audi car parts back in high school. Oh. So I kind of cut my chops that way, and then doing cell phone sales while I was in college, of selling all my friends' cell phones and electronic gadgets. In terms of best practices, I mean, the title, like you mentioned, is key. People are searching for keywords. If they can't find it, they're never going to buy your item. Mm-hmm. Doing the proper cataloging, you know, eBay has a catalog system that you're inputting basically the model or order number to help find out exactly what that product is and make it more searchable. High quality photos is very key. You know, eBay's algorithm, if you have low quality photos, there's a bunch of junk in the background, they're not going to serve it up on top of the list. Mm-hmm. There's other things you can do to promote on there. You can do sponsored listings to drive mm-hmm. sales. So kind of a number of things to move up in the ranking.
And when you're listing things on eBay, I'm not an expert in all eBay stuff, but I know that certain products, and I would assume probably most laptops, like if you just say what type it is, it will pre-populate a lot of the information that it knows.
Exactly.
About that.
Yeah, if you type that model number in, it's going to help you catalog it and put everything in there, and it'll kind of form the title on its own. You know, we don't do any kind of pre-made titles. We have our own, you know, algorithm to fill it all out, and it's really just putting the exact keywords in and the specs that the customer needs to know. You know, if, for instance, you know, your machine would say, you know, Apple 13-inch MacBook Air.
And then do you have a sort of a branded page, like when they look at the more details of those items, they see like the Sell Your Mac branded page underneath?
Absolutely.
The listing, I guess.
But a lot of customers are on mobile now and they don't even go to the branded page. You know, they're just going to see the title and just buy, you know, off the item details. But if you go to see more details, you know, there's a branded page. It has all the specs laid out for every single component in the computer. It's going to have the grading. You know, it's going to say, you know, A grade. You know, maybe it has a light scratch. It'll tell you where it is. It'll tell you it's 100% functional and fully tested, kind of all that information.
So, you know, eBay as a marketplace and as a place to be selling your products, you know, obviously there's a lot of competitors they have out there. I mean, you look at people selling things on Facebook, people selling things on Craigslist, on Amazon in particular. And at least just in my own personal experience, sometimes I'll list them in all four places and a book or something I'm selling.
See which one sells first.
Yeah. You know, so is that something that you think, you know, have you looked at that, being able to, like, I've worked with some Amazon sellers before, and that's a whole other world, of course, and different rules and everything else going on. You know, Craigslist, of course, is a little more like free-for-all to some degree.
The Craigslisters try to bargain too much. You know, I did that back in the day when I was, you know, working out of my house. And I feel like every time I'd post an ad for a $500 laptop and they'd want it for $350 after I talked to them for an hour, that was tough. Facebook Marketplace, you know, could be a viable option for us. You know, usually it's just individual sales. And sometimes they don't trust companies on there from what I've gathered. The Amazon is interesting because you used to be able to sell on Amazon. And fortunately, it wasn't a large part of our business because Apple actually cut out every individual seller unless they were authorized. They wanted to really control that marketplace when they did a partnership with Amazon to sell new. So, you know, there's certain levels that you're allowed to sell. You have to be Apple authorized and do over like, you know, $10 million in sales on there to, you know, be allowed at this point.
You know, so they sort of exerted their control over Amazon.
They did.
Wow.
So yeah, we're sticking with eBay. We're launching our own e-commerce site, and I think the e-commerce site is going to be the best for us. We'll be able to really control the customer experience and deliver the best value to our customer.
Yeah, so tell me about that e-commerce site. You know, I guess what kind of features is it going to have, and then how are you going to sort of direct folks there? I guess you're going to, you know, right now when you're doing your links and stuff out there and your AdWords and whatnot, I guess they're going to your page right now anyway. They're not going to your eBay store.
Correct. Yeah, we get a ton of traffic at sellyourmac.com. So ultimately, we're going to have the e-commerce site living right on there. But our e-commerce brand is going to be renewedmacs.com. So that'll be its kind of own landing page. But I think just the traffic we get on Sell Your Mac alone will drive a lot of people to the e-commerce site. So being able to offer that experience right when they land on our site that they can either buy or sell or both.
Okay. What are you building the e-commerce site in terms of just
a Shopify platform?
Okay.
We got some really cool features that I can't talk about quite yet.
Yeah. Cool. Do you know when that's going to launch, though?
In the next few months, for sure. Yeah, we're kind of right in the midst of it at the moment. Long time coming, for sure.
Okay. Great. I think you mentioned a while back, you know, when you first kind of started, that there were some hard times dealing with eBay. How did you sort of persevere through that and get to the other side?
The times with eBay weren't tough. It was really some scams we had on some large purchases.
Oh, wow.
The biggest one that I've had to deal with was about $250,000 scam.
Wow.
That we had wired a ton of money overseas for a huge iPhone deal, and that was kind of the deposit. And ultimately, it never came. And that seller said that he was scammed. And, you know, I didn't even know I was being middlemanned at the time. You know, the individual that I had paid, you know, his company checked out. He was a real person in the community. He didn't give back and stuff as well. So, you know, everything looked rosy until it wasn't. And, you know, it took me 6 years to ultimately pay off that debt.
Wow.
So that lived with me for a while. And what I've learned is don't wire money overseas. So, you know, now all these bulk deals these people try to sell us, I will only pay with PayPal or credit card because I know I can't get scammed. And if they ask for a wire and that's the only option, I just refuse.
Interesting. And certainly that could have killed some companies, you know.
It basically did kill us. You know, I was in a terrible place of mind at the time and really had to fight back, you know, mentally with the support system of my family and stuff like that to, you know, kind of get things back in order.
Awesome. And is your family all here locally as well still, I guess? Or
that's one of the things keeping me in Cincinnati. You know, besides the company, I do have both my parents here and my brother is in Orlando. So I get to see him a few times a year.
So a new product that Apple launched recently that I wanted to touch on was the Apple Card. What do you think about that? And I think you just recently got one as well.
I have. You know, you first apply in the Wallet app. And you can start using it digitally, you know, instantaneously after they approve you. And it's a great experience because you can use Apple Pay on there and get 2% back at any merchant. And it's super secure because they're never going to pass on any card info. You know, the physical card, you have to apply for that, you know, to get it in the mail. Just got mine the other day. I actually posted online today that I opened it up and you know, there's no number on it. Which I've never seen a credit card with no number. So no one can swap your number when they're watching you in line. So that was kind of cool. I think the biggest use case is really just a tight-knit ecosystem for it. You know, it's going to work seamlessly with all your Apple products, and you're going to know exactly where you're shopping. They're going to break it down in terms of a category. They're actually the digital card changes color depending on what you're buying. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that we've talked about is there's no late fee.
Yeah.
So yeah, you miss your payment, you don't have to pay, you know, $30-$40 late fee, and they've have super low, you know, APR, doesn't go up when you miss a payment and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of industry leading in terms of not charging their customers a lot of interest.
Well, I think for students and folks that sometimes might just timing wise not make a payment or forget or get sure. busy or whatever, because that's of course where they get you, and particularly in college and whatnot. When I was in college, I racked up quite a lot of credit card debt and just said, I'll pay this once I have a job, you know. And having that is a pretty nice feature. I've certainly never seen any other credit card. But it seems like just in general, they're trying to just disrupt people's use of credit.
I think so. I mean, Apple Pay is growing, you know, exponentially each mm-hmm. year. It's, you know, 300-400% usage
yeah.
increase. So yeah, it's a great way to pay, super secure. I think that's going to be kind of industry leading in the future.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, and that's just another example of something that, you know, you kind of only really works if you have the Apple platform, all the pieces to it in place, right? You know, you go to a website, you say, oh, I can pay with Apple Pay. And, you know, it will ask your phone for the fingerprint. And I guess on some of the newer Mac laptops, they've got the fingerprint reader on
Correct.
There as well.
Yep.
You know, maybe I'm sure there's competing technologies out there for that. I'm sure Google has such and other stuff and whatever. But I hate entering my credit card number. And so I'm to the point where if someone...
So much rather use my finger.
Yeah, if someone says, oh, enter your credit card, man, forget it. I'm not going to buy. And that's funny, right? Because at one point in the industry, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was all about let's make life easier for people because they'll never have to mail in a check to the catalog company, right? Let's make it, they can use your credit card. It's so easy. That's not easy enough. Like just using my credit card is too hard.
Better be one tap these days.
Yeah.
It's not fast enough.
And the same with all the Apple Pay via the watch and whatnot, you know, at Panera or wherever you're at.
Yeah, you can leave your phone at home and just use your watch.
Yeah. I mean, and I've seen more and more companies will have their membership card details and whatnot on your watch as well. So like Starbucks and others, whatever. So it's not just credit cards, you know, it's
true. All the reward stuff is, yeah, much yeah. more convenient now. And a lot of it stores in the wallet app.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's funny as people get, it's not that they're getting lazier and lazier. I mean, maybe I have, but, you know, just that you
get used to. Let's be honest, they probably are.
Yeah, but you get used to that convenience, you know, that, again, getting out your credit card and typing in, especially now there's that number on the back, and I'll try to remember that. It's just too much hassle.
We are in a convenient society these days. I mean, you want to order from your phone and have it delivered an hour later.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned that you did a video just recently of your kind of Apple Card reveal. And I've noticed in recent months, you've been doing a lot more videos and, of course, a lot more podcasting. So how's that strategy sort of working, I guess, first for video? And what are your thoughts around that? And how is that? What are you hoping to leverage there?
I think the videos, you know, get a decent amount of views, and people enjoy watching videos over reading content these days. So trying to do more video, I think it takes a lot more planning. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to do a live unboxing, for instance, is a little more planning than, you know, just making a blog post or something like mm-hmm. that. So yeah, I got to prep accordingly, you know, not a lot of time today to do it, but I try to get maybe a video up every couple weeks. And in general, just doing more posting to get the word out, you know, trying to be, you know, more branded. I'm trying to be the chief Mac man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, getting the word out about SlayerMac.com is very important to me.
So is that a new title you've given yourself, or has that always been your title?
It's definitely new. You know, I wanted to have something kind of fun and specific to my industry. And I can't remember exactly who I saw do something similar to that. There's a chief tax strategist or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I should be the chief Mac man. Hmm. And I just kind of ran with it and it stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. There was a local brewery here somewhere. I saw that they had something like a director of brewing cleanliness or something silly, like, you know, that they made up for that. That was a fun title.
Got to keep your beer lines clean.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I guess, you know, do you think that, for a business such as yours, you know, is how important is that sort of personal brand and, you know, them understanding like, oh, that's Brian. Like, you know, I think that's very powerful for a lot of service oriented companies. So you're not just, you know, in my field, you know, ABC Consulting. that means nothing.
Being personal is key. I mean, having a being able to see the team behind the product or service, I think, is really helpful. That they know there's real people interacting. You know, if it's a faceless company, I don't think it's going to be a great brand in the future. Yeah. So not that I'm trying to only brand myself, but I am trying to help spread the word and love of Sell Your Mac to ultimately help people get in the newer Apple devices. I want them to have the best Apple experience.
Yeah. Is that something that's out of your comfort zone, you think, to sort of promote yourself
in
that way?
It is right in my sweet spot. I have no problem being in front of a camera. I've always, I think, been very outgoing. I'll strike up a conversation with every single person I run into. Mm-hmm. So not everyone can do that, but yeah, it doesn't bother me. I didn't have to change my personality to get up there.
That's great. And you've been doing a lot of podcasting recently as well. I guess a lot of the same reasons, and been appearing on some pretty good shows out there that have quite a lot of listeners and stuff. So
it's been helpful sharing my, startup story and getting the word out, and hopefully I can help some other fellow entrepreneurs, break through some of the hard times they might be in. Just hearing that someone else has gone through something similar certainly can help. And, just sharing that journey with people that are young, people don't realize that, start small, start young. It's a long time to, ultimately, be successful in your industry. Hmm. We've been doing this now. I Sell Your Mac for 10 years, but I was doing eBay, exclusively for 5 years before that. So it's really been, a 15-year journey that we're on just to get to where we're at now. So yeah, these awards did not pop up, years back. So yeah, it's definitely a grind, and making people know that it's, that kind of pig-headed determination, discipline to get you there.
Yeah, patience is so important. My favorite Steve Jobs quote is, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said he thinks some of the best companies in the world fail because people just are impatient. They don't have the perseverance to just wait. And so they expect massive success 3 years in, 4 years in, 5 years in, and they give up and they get frustrated. And I think the quote or something was around, like, because he was talking about companies they watch and think, maybe we should buy them, and then they disappear and they're like, oh, well, we would have bought them if they just waited a little longer,
Timing's everything.
Yeah. And so, that was, it's definitely well said that you got to, like you said, persevere. So what are, for folks out there listening, what are the top three reasons and the main benefits that they should reach out to you, talk a little bit about what they're using with their Macs?
Probably the best reason to use our service is to avoid the risks and hassles of selling by yourself. I hate hearing that my friends got scammed trying to sell their own iPhone on eBay because it got bought from someone out of the country, or they sent a fake PayPal payment and stuff like that. I'd rather just guarantee them a price and help them out. The best thing about our company is our level of customer service. I can point back to our customer service scores, but ultimately, only thing you need to know is we're going to be with you every step of the way, and we're there to help, and we're going to be honest. And not every company is going to be honest or give you that personal level of touch. So we're going to make sure that we communicate, effectively, throughout, give you the best price we possibly can, and deliver the best experience.
That's great. And if folks want to find you, your website is sellyourmac.com.
Go to sellyourmac.com, and I'll even drop a promo code in here. If you use the promo Unstoppable, I'll give you a $10 bonus anytime you're selling your item for the next year.
Great. And your phone number, if they would like to call instead?
You can call us at 844-SELL-MAC. Nice. SELLMAC.
Great. Well, Brian, really appreciate having you on the show. I've watched your company for the last few years. We've both sort of started around the same time, and you've just had such great success. It's really, really inspiring, and just everything you're doing in the community is awesome.
Well, thanks for having me on to share my story about Sell Your Mac. I love talking about the business. I'm super passionate about it, so it's great to be here with you today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.